Welcome into the newest episode of the Hoth Hangout Podcast. Glad to have you here with us, joining us for episode 111 of the podcast. And it's a special one, too, partially because we've decided here for the next 3 weeks or so, we're going to be doing weekly mini episodes recapping the three episodes of Andor that come out each week. Of course, today's episode is covering episodes 1 through 3 of season 2 of Andor. We're pumped, excited to be here. Normally, we'd go over all the good stuff that starts each podcast, like the intro stuff and the news, but today we're skipping right into it. Joey, how you doing, and how you feeling about episode, or rather season 2, episodes 1 through 3 of Andor?
It was a good launching pad. I'm expecting a lot more in the latter two, oh, I guess three. There's still three more weeks, right, of Andor. Mm-hmm. So, kind of ended on a weird note, a weird just feeling.
Yeah.
But I think that's okay if we're saying this is the first quarter of the episodes that we're gonna see. So I'm fine with where we are right now. I'm interested in seeing what the next three episodes are gonna be, because it's like the second of four. It's kind of like that weird, like nothing could actually be happening in these next three episodes. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, the first three were I was just excited to have Andor back in our lives, honestly.
Right. Well, and to mention, too, to the timeline, I guess for those that don't know, there's going to be a year that passes between each part of this show. So episodes 1 through 3 during 4 ABY, episodes 5 through 7, four through six, during 3 ABY, 8 through 10, no, yeah, sorry, 7 through 9, wow, mathing is hard all of a sudden, during 2 ABY. And then the last three episodes, 10, 11, and 12, in 1 ABY, a year before A New Hope takes place. And so, to kind of go back to what you said during, I think it was our last reaction to episode 3, which, by the way, if you're watching this episode or listening to this episode of the podcast, if you haven't checked out our reactions to episodes 1, 2, and 3, or any of our reactions to season 2 of Andor, those are available on YouTube as well. It feels like we're picking up back where we left off with season 1, but I don't know. I personally feel like the writing has still maybe even improved a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I know that might be a hot take. I know there's a lot of people out there who, with Andor, they're like, oh, you know, it's a slow-paced show. It's kind of like the ins and outs of the politics that were behind everything, and I don't really care that much about that. Give me my lightsabers.
Mm-hmm.
I know something that we talked about in that same guise as well is the fact that this show doesn't really spoon feed you the information, which is something that I know, you know, we would listen to like a Luthen and Mon Mothma conversation in the episode. We're like, wait, but what are they saying? What are they actually? Right. We have to think about what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I know that maybe you do, maybe you don't appreciate that about this show.
Yeah.
But amongst kind of the plot lines that are going on, there's sort of these divisions between everyone on Chandrila, the Minno Rao crew, and then Cassian kind of doing his own thing for a lot of these three episodes on that Senar test facility after he crash lands there, as well as kind of the Imperial storylines, including Dedra and Karn, which definitely was the weirdest part of these three episodes.
We'll get into that for sure.
Yeah, yeah. amongst kind of each of those storylines, it feels like they're almost paralleling the Cassian and the Mon Mothma ones, and then like the mm-hmm. Dedra and Karn and the Minno Rao are kind of like, maybe Minno Rao not quite as much of a subplot,
right? Yeah.
But if I had to say which ones are subplots, it's probably those two, while Cassian and Mon Mothma's are kind of like the headliners.
Yeah, of course.
But kind of the Cassian and the Minno Rao one has sort of come together at the end of episode 3, as we know. How did you feel like they did in terms of combining all of these storylines into the episodes themselves?
I think they did a great job. What's great about having season 2 is that a lot of things are established now. You kind of have an idea of each role. Like someone like Luthen, for instance, you know, that is kind of like he's overwatching everything. He's the one that knows all. So you kind of know where his mindset is going to be. He feels like that guy who's always like one to 15 steps ahead of you, you know? And to have that kind of character in there, you're like, what's he up to? So you're constantly questioning his decisions, how he is making his choices. So I think that's what's great about his particular character, where characters like Cassian, like Mon Mothma, are kind of little puppets to him. Like, they're just like, all right, well, I'm just going to orchestrate this entire thing and then really confuse you with the way I'm going to tell you I want you to do all this with numbers. I mean, for instance, we got to find that number. And I'm like, I think to this day, you know, although it's been just one day, but I think we're still a little confused at what the number is they're referring to. I think at first we thought it was money. And this is referring to what they're going to do with Tay, because Tay seems to be wanting more for Mon Mothma at the end of all of this. So is it money, or is it terminating him in some way because he's kind of a loose end? So, characters like him really bring it all together. On the other hand, characters like Karn, still confused of why he's got such a big role in this show. It feels like he's like going to be like the setup guy. And I think we were expecting this from season one, that he was going to be the guy at the end of the season to like have this miraculous comeback, this huge storyline, that he was the one that pushed the button, or he's saying, you know. And I think we learned our lessons from season one that may not be happening, especially how he's acting now. For your original question, the way they put this all together in these kind of separate parallel storylines, it really, and I mentioned this in our reaction, it felt like a movie. You know, it really did feel like we were watching a movie, the way it was cutting back and forth. You could tell the music was kind of picking up, especially at the end. They were bumping at the end. But, the way they filmed it and the way they cut it, it really seemed like a movie. And, you know, that's what I actually really enjoyed about the first three episodes.
Yeah, it does kind of have that flow to it. And at the same time, you wonder if it will maintain that flow into, like, between the time gaps, the one-year time gaps. Or will they feel, like, will we pick up with characters and be like, whoa, they changed a lot in that year off-screen?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of going back to what you said about Karn, yeah, again, they are just continue to lean into the oddness and the weirdness, and now, like, Dedra and Karn's mother are being incorporated into that, too. I mean, I guess if we want to, we can go in. I know that's an episode three scene. Maybe here in a sec, if we want to talk about the specifics of the awkwardness of that scene, we can.
Yeah.
But what did you think? I want to ask you about the very opening scene of episode one, how that, I mean, for me, I was watching that. I was like, holy cow, this is like, people are complaining about no action in this show. Yeah. This is awesome. You know what I said it felt like? It felt, have you ever played Battlefront, the original one, Star Wars Battlefront from... You know how when you do the space missions and you fly the ships into the hangars, you like always run into the ceilings?
Yep.
That's, I was like, this is every kid in 2005 every person in 2005 playing Star Wars Battlefront, this opening scene. What did you think about that scene?
I'm with you. I mean, there's definitely action to be had. And no offense to the last couple of series that Star Wars has put out, but this felt very Star Wars very quickly. You got into this, you know, I don't know, I forget the name of that particular TIE fighter, but I think it's either a prototype or some different kind of TIE fighter that we're not used to seeing. But, I mean, you kind of see that right away. You see the spy from the Empire helping him out. I think her name was it Naya?
Naya,
yeah. We see her in there as well, so... very Star Wars-y, and I was really happy. Didn't see any lightsabers, obviously, for the first three episodes, and that's fine. But it felt right, and it felt exactly where it should be. And again, not to throw shade at something like Skeleton Crew, where it was just basically something that happened during the Star Wars timeline and universe. This was something that was significant in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, it didn't feel like... it didn't feel like it was trying to like fit its way into the Star Wars universe necessarily, as much as it just felt like it was naturally a part of it.
Exactly.
And I don't think that's a small feat. I think that is harder than people probably give it credit for too. The other part of the first episode that I think you and I were kind of interested in and maybe a little bit perplexed by. And by the end of their time, we were like, wait, so what was their role supposed to be? Was the gang, the Brigid gang or whatever they were called, the ones on that jungle planet that Cassian crash landed to, who, you know, in the end, I think it was actually, was it in episode two or episode three where they play the, is episode two where they play the five hands game? Mm-hmm. And then that was just like how they were going to decide things. And that's how Cassian escaped.
I mean, that was kind of weird. That was definitely the weirder. And I mean, this is part of the a series that has Didra and Karn. So that was a very weird way to resolve a dispute between. I mean, they were shooting blasters at each other. You understand? Mm-hmm. They were looking to kill. And then at the end of it, they're like, you know what? Let's play the best of five rock, paper, scissors.
Mm-hmm. But it felt like it was way more than best of five. It felt like they had played 20 rounds by the time Cassian snuck onto the ship. But in the end, it was, I don't know how I felt about it as a use of story and plot, but it definitely delayed Cassian from getting to Min Arrow, where, you know, meanwhile over there, they learn the Empire is sweeping the planet for illegals the whole time, you know, during, I think in the end of episode one, maybe is when they find that out, if I remember correctly. And then there's this guy named Kellen, who's in some superior position, who's trying to help him out. And
I liked him.
He was a good guy. And then, you know, in the end of episode three, Brasso kind of covers for him by pretending to be upset with him as if he's betrayed them, when in reality he's just, you know, fallen captive to the Imperials. And so, you know, with his own sacrifice at the end of the episode, as Cassian and Bix see and find out, he also kind of saved Kellen in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
By not throwing him under the bus there in the end as well. Side note with the Min Arrow storyline, there was a part, I believe it was the first time we're on Min Arrow, where Bix is having a nightmare, and we see that guy in the mirror. And during the reaction, you and I were like, who is that? It's not Karn. It looks like a Hux from the sequel trilogy. But it was Dr. Gorst from season one, and that just shows, like,
how long it's been. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I read that, and I was like, who is Dr. Gorst? I had to, like, go back and look it up.
I had every intention to go back and watch season one, but that just didn't happen.
Well, you know what I found out after we watched episodes 1 through 3, Disney Plus has a season one Andor recap. It's like its own video, and I didn't look at the length, but I would imagine it can't be more than like
10 minutes,
30 minutes. Maybe even 10.
I don't know how avid of a book reader you are, but if you've ever like read a book and then like its sequel comes out like 2 or 3 years later, And then they start like telling all these, you know, saying all these character names, and you're just like, who was that again? You know, like that's kind of what I felt like in some of these scenes, to be honest.
Which is the same feeling anytime anyone reads a Game of Thrones book. It's like there are 84 characters and I cannot keep track of all of them.
Right.
That was a little bit how I felt going into the season two of Andor. It was like, all right, there's like 12 characters on Shandrala I need to like pay attention to. There's the Min Arrow characters. There's all the Imperials.
All the Imperials, yeah.
Yeah. Now there's this brigade of people on this jungle planet, and I don't know how many of them are going to matter.
Or even that matters. I wonder if we're going to see them ever again. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't.
You wouldn't be surprised. You would be surprised if we did.
Yeah. I would be surprised if we did at some point. Yeah.
I feel the same way. Yeah. The other interesting kind of dynamic, kind of the parallels, one of them I wanted to talk about with the, like, the Mon Mothma storyline versus the Cassian storyline, is it's almost interesting, like, stepping away from season one and seeing Cassian's mother's sacrifice and what that meant for the bond between a mother and a child, and then seeing, like, how the parallel of Mon Mothma's relationship with her daughter and the sacrifices that she makes for the cause of the rebellion has kind of, like, harmed that relationship to the point where she's trying to have a really meaningful moment, like minutes before her daughter's getting married, who's like 14, by the way, by this weird Chandrilan custom or something. And her daughter, I wish I could remember the exact line. Oh, I wish you were drunk, basically.
Right.
I was like, oh gosh, that hurts. So it's just this kind of a mirror image of this mother-child relationship and how like the costs of the sacrifice can bond people or it can tear people apart, basically.
Absolutely right, yeah.
So, by the way, did you feel like the Chandra-less storyline kind of felt like it was dragging along? Not dragging. I enjoyed it. I don't mean to say I didn't enjoy it. Just mm-hmm. compared to the other storylines, it felt like it was moving slow. Like each episode was almost like a day of the wedding festivities, basically.
Right. I think that was on purpose, that it was, you know, kind of set up yeah. that way. Because I think this is the first time we've ever seen this, if I'm not mistaken, this kind of marriage, you know, rituals on Chandra-la. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably why they want to really flesh it out. I mean, beautiful place. You know, we even mentioned on some of the scenery that we saw, but it's obviously a huge party. They wanted to, and I think they wanted to show the contrast between what's happening there to like what's happening on Min Rao. You know, just like a totally different, still in the same universe, but the classes are just completely different. You know, and I think this is probably a good spot to like even mention like some of the more adult themes that we are seeing in this particular show that we've definitely yeah. never seen in any other. Maybe not all of the themes, but they really go into it like real, real hard. Like, so, you know, some of the politics, we've talked about it before, how this is maybe reminiscent of maybe of Attack of the Clones, where it was very much politically driven. And I guess this is the first time for me anyway, that I was like experiencing a Star Wars that I really like saw parallels of the art versus kind of the real world, you know, without going too far into it, but I mean, we're talking about illegals, we're talking about trying to find all of them and all that. So it's hard to not make those parallels. Right. And
the themes of sexual assault too, yeah. in that episode.
Yeah. And I mean, that's something that we definitely have never ever seen in, you know, with a person of power kind of going after, you know, somebody who he thinks he could take advantage of, who he believes is weaker. But mm-hmm. the great thing about Star Wars is that you have the platform to be able to say, to flip that story and say you can come out on top, you know, of this particular situation, regardless of, you know, unfortunate, you know, circumstances where maybe you are in that situation. Like there is, you know, so Bix literally fought for her life out of there. I mean, even with her saying the word rape in Star Wars, I mean, for me, that was like super powerful, you know,
right.
to be able to do that. And I think it was definitely worth mentioning for us to talk about as well.
Yeah. Well, and another thing that is kind of emblematic of this idea of kind of the more adult themes of Andor as a show compared to any other Star Wars show is Perrin's monologue that he's mm-hmm. giving at the wedding festivities. Mon Mothma's husband, basically his message is like, marriage sucks a lot of the time, but you have to reach for the joy. And right. you're like, dang, that's kind of like a pessimistic look on things. But I mean, his exact quote is, pain will find you. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh gosh. And then he follows it up with, the music is buried beneath all things. Mm-hmm. In other words, like, there is pain, you have to find the music. So not the most optimistic look on marriage.
Right. Yeah. How's the marriage going, by the way?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm 2 months in, baby. I'm 2 months in. Yeah. Well, then even like, you know, Mon Mothma basically over consuming alcohol and just dancing the night away is almost emblematic of that too, in a way. But
finding that music, I mean, I forgot about that line, but like finding that music quite literally in that episode, she kind of does that, right? And, you know, in all the things that are going wrong in her universe, in her world, I mean, you could have all the money you can, you know, I mean, obviously they're a rich family, they could have everything, but still, daughter's, you know, relationship is in shambles. You know, the rebellion she's completely responsible for, and she's got this thing with Tay going on. You know, even within all of that, she's got to be able to find an escape, find the music, and apparently there's a YouTube video of her dancing for an hour.
It's there. 1 hour of Mon Mothma dancing with background lo-fi music.
Nice.
Check it out for those of you who are lo-fi fans. Oh, one thing we didn't mention that is kind of just an important point that I'm assuming will be more important in the future episodes is that these Imperials led by Director Krennic are wanting to mine this mineral from Gorman called calcite. We don't have like a ton of the details of what that will look like or mean to the plot, but basically they need this mineral to coat the surfaces of the lasers of the Death Star in order to, so that it functions properly. All that to say, like, they need this mineral for the Death Star, and they're willing to, like, you know, decimate the population if they need to, and they have conversation about it. So that'll probably become important in future episodes as well. We already really touched on the Dedra and Karn awkwardness. I mean, that scene, though, where she stands up to his mom and is like, look, lady, this is how it's going to be. That was pretty awesome.
For anyone who is married or has a significant other, just imagine your partner doing that to your mother. You know, for me, I was just like, oh, my God, if my wife ever did that, you know, that would be wild. But I think it was a good, you know, we joke about it, but I thought it was actually pretty good just kind of seeing that. And you want to talk about pain. I mean, that was, you saw a little bit of pain in especially Karn. That poor boy was laying on his bed, just like needed a break from everything. But I thought it was, as silly as it all is, you know, maybe that's what it's there for. That little comic relief between, you know, how thick and how dense and heavy the rest of the storylines are.
Right. It kind of like adds a little bit of a, like a break in the action where there's this uncomfortable awkwardness that's somehow oddly appealing. It's a hard thing to describe. But, yeah,
watching a train wreck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The three episodes also just concludes with Cassian reuniting with Bix and Willman on Minarau, as we've just lost kind of our first major character of season two, Brasso, and probably, I would guess, not going to be our last major character that we lose as part of season two. So, what is it? 07s that you like to say, Joey?
07s.
Yep. 07s for Brasso, and a sacrifice made for the rebellion, and but one that perhaps will build the foundation of what is to come for the Rebel Alliance. So, stepping away from the three episodes, I wanted to get your thoughts on, if you were to give each of them a grade out of 10, how are you feeling about each episode?
So out of 10, I mean, I'll go in order of what I liked, and then I'll go by the grade. So I think episode three was my favorite, followed by one, then two. Out of 10, I probably give episode three an 8.5 to... Because it is the first, you know, we grade these based off of the series itself. So kind of more giving a good amount of wiggle room for a possible 10 later on down the line. So not that I didn't like it. I think it's more of just, it's where we are right now. So 8.5 for that. Episode one, I think there was a lot of just excitement kind of going into it too. So that's a lot of what I enjoyed about it, especially kind of seeing these characters again. I'll admit, you know, it's been couple of years since we've seen them, so I think there's a lot of that. So probably 8 for that, and then maybe a more of a 7.5 for episode 2, because it as much as it laid some groundwork, it wasn't a particular exciting episode.
Yeah, I've got pretty similar feeling. Oh, were you gonna say something?
Yeah, and it's just the and I think it may have gone a little bit lower because of the rock, paper, scissors, Star Wars edition.
Yeah, I feel like I liked episode three the most, but it had just so many weird particular choices, like the rock, paper, scissors with the brigade. The Mon Mothma dancing was a very long, like, interspliced thing that we saw her dancing, like, what, 5 different times across the course of the last 10 minutes or something. And then the Cyril and the Karn and Dedra stuff is still just like, what is this part's role in this show? I feel pretty similarly. I'd probably go like 7 to 7.5 for episode 2. I'm feeling pretty close with episode 1 and episode 3. I particularly loved how episode 1 began. I thought it felt really strong to me. So I'll probably go like 8.5 even for episode 1, and then episode 3 was probably like an 8 for me. But pretty close and pretty similar to what you were feeling. But any thoughts leading into, as we wrap up today's episode, any thoughts leading into what you want to see from episodes 4 through 6?
I mean, probably Saw. I'd love to see Saw in this next set of episodes. I would love to see K2SO at some point here as well. And maybe just a cameo. If we can get just a random Baze or Chirrut like just kind of in the background. They had crossed paths in the past before Rogue One came. You know, just something like that. Give me that. If you can give me that, then Andor might be the best Star Wars series ever.
There you go. I'm not willing to rule it out that this could be, by the time it's done, the most well-written Star Wars show from beginning to end. I think there's a very strong case to be made for that, but we'll have to see how season two ends up. As we mentioned off the top, if you haven't checked out our reactions to any of these episodes of Andor, they're available over on YouTube and coming out each week when the episodes do go live. So be sure to head on over there. And if you're watching this on YouTube or you're listening to the podcast version, if you're not yet subscribed to us on YouTube, check us out over there as we're getting closer to that 500 subscriber milestone. And we'd appreciate it. And it would mean a lot if you subscribe to the channel. So we thank you so much for listening to today's mini episode of the podcast. There will be a mini episode each of the next 3 weeks. Going live usually on Thursday morning, so stay tuned to your wherever you get your podcasts or YouTube for the video version. And once again, thank you so much for watching this episode of the Hoth Hangout Podcast. Shout out to George Lucas and shout out to Dave Filoni and shout out to the great show that is Andor. Hope to catch you all in any of our reactions or next week's mini episode of the podcast covering episodes 4 through 6 of season 2 of Andor. And until then, we appreciate you once again, and may the Force be with you.